Yeah.
Go back.
Okay. So, yeah, a good question is how we relate the four satipatthanas with the 16 steps of anapanasati. So if those of you who are not familiar with these, it'll probably sound a bit bewildering, but I won't describe the whole 16 steps, but the suttas themselves do clearly correlate these things. Okay, the first four of the 16 steps correspond with the contemplation of body. The second four, that we call the second tetrad, is the contemplation of feelings. The third tetrad is the contemplation of mind. And the fourth tetrad is the contemplation of dhammas. Yeah? So the interesting one here is that contemplation of dhammas, because in the Anapanasati Sutta, that fourth tetrad starts out anicca-anupassī viharati, one contemplating impermanence, one breathes in and out. Yeah? So this is obviously vipassana. Yeah? That's exactly what vipassana is contemplation of impermanence. And within the way it's described in the Satipatthana Sutta, yeah, it's also seeing that impermanence, yeah, impermanence, causality, the conditioned nature of these things. So you're seeing impermanence. But the important thing about that is, as the fourth tetrad of breath meditation, it's the impermanence of what? Yeah? It's obviously the impermanence of the breath. Yeah, it's the impermanence of that whole experience of meditation which we've been having. That's what we've been seeing. That whole unfolding of meditation is like an unfolding of impermanence. Yeah? And it's your understanding conditionality, your understanding when I've got lots of defilements and distractions in my mind, it's not peaceful, it's not happy. When those defilements are gone, then my mind's peaceful, it's happy. Yeah? So you see, oh, that's how conditionality works. That's how we cause suffering for ourselves. That's how the Four Noble Truths work. Yeah?
One day, you mentioned just now about the how many pages taken out of Satipatthana that was dropped out.
Quite a few. It depends how you think, but it's in the
That was happened 100, just over 100 years ago.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how long, but it's. I think it's. Well, it's mentioned in the PTS edition, which was printed in 1888.
It's not during a council or anything?
It may have been, I suspect it was at the Fifth Council, what they call the Fifth Council, which was in Burma in the 1800s, I'm not sure the exact date. So I suspect that's that edition, but I haven't been able to actually confirm that yet. Yeah, but I would like to be able to see if it goes any earlier. But for those of you who are familiar with it, in the Digha Nikaya, In both versions of the Satipatthana Sutta, the last exercise it mentions in contemplation of dhammas is the Four Noble Truths. Now, in the Majjhima Nikaya version, the middle length version, it just mentions the Four Noble Truths, doesn't give any explanation. In the Digha Nikaya, the long discourses, it has a very long exposition on the Four Noble Truths, which actually is almost as long as the whole rest of the sutta. Yeah? It's almost like double the length, and it's the longest description of the Four Noble Truths found anywhere in any sutta. Yeah? And that whole section has been moved from the Digha Nikaya into the Majjhima Nikaya. Yeah? So it's many pages of material. Now that particular section itself must also be quite late, because it's not found anywhere else. There's no version of the Satipatthana Sutta found in the Digha Nikaya or the Digha Agama in Chinese, nor is there a version found in the Sarvasivadin Digha Agama in Sanskrit. And so it seems extremely likely that the Digha Nikaya version was created after the schisms, and quite possibly created in Sri Lanka. Yeah?
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Venerable sir, could you please recall the Satipatthana Sutta? Just now you say it consists of five what? And seven enlightenment factors.
Yeah.
The five, I couldn't
five
get
you. Hindrances. The five hindrances.
Hindrances.
Nivarana. Yeah.
Thank you.
That's right. Yeah, in the some versions, all versions have the five hindrances and seven enlightenment factors. Other versions have other things in there as well. So some of them have the five aggregates, the six senses, the four noble truths, and so on. But all of them have the five hindrances and the seven enlightenment factors. The other reason for thinking, as well as there's several reasons for thinking that that must have been the original form of that. One, of course, is that all of them have that. The other is that there are many other suttas that also have just the five hindrances and seven enlightenment factors. It's actually a very common pairing to put these two together, whereas nowhere else do we find these put together with those other practices in the same way. And the other reason, which is almost really the clincher for this one, and I had some discussion about this with my friend Venerable Analio, who's also doing a study of the Satipatthana Sutta, and when I pointed this particular fact out to him, he also had to agree with me that yes, you're right on this particular point. And that is to say, in the Sanyutta, it has one sutta, very important little sutta, called the Samudaya Sutta, Sutta on the Origin, and it talks about the origin of each of the four Satipatthanas, what brings them about. Now, can't go into details, but the origin of the fourth Satipatthana, contemplation of Dhammas, is said to be Manasikara, which means attention. Yeah? Now, this Manasikara, if we look where elsewhere is described, very, very often it says if you have good attention, wise attention, Yoniso Manasikara gives rise to the seven enlightenment factors. Ayoniso Manasikara gives rise to the five hindrances. Yeah, bad attention or unwise attention gives rise to the hindrances. Very, very often it teaches like this. Maybe 10 or 20 or 30 passages where it will talk in this way. Wise attention. And so it never does it say that you can, through attention, you can give rise to the aggregates. How can that be the case? This is not the aggregates or the sense bases are not brought into being through attention. Yeah? And that's, the sutta doesn't describe it like that. So that particular one, and that's exactly also how the commentary explains it. The commentary says, wise attention gives rise to the enlightenment factors, unwise attention gives rise to the hindrances. So it seems to me very, very likely that that was the original meaning of that particular section. Come.
What you're trying to convey today is a lot, and I'm afraid I might not remember a lot. So you have any books or something that I can read over and over?
Sure. Yeah, I realize that, so I want to try to stretch people a little bit. But yes, I've written a book called A History of Mindfulness, and that's been completed, and they're just doing the layout now. So hopefully that will be printed sometime in the new year. So that will be available, I hope.
Another question.
If you want to see it in the meantime, it's available as a PDF file on the Santi Forest Monastery website. So you can download.
What website?
Santi Forest Monastery.
Santi Forest.
Yeah, so you can have a look there.
Another question is that some meditation teacher teach about nimittas. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
But then it's not mentioned in the Satipatthana Sutta, so I'm a bit feel a bit weird.
Okay, so yeah, mention of nimittas related to the Satipatthana Sutta. Okay, the first thing to understand with that is that the word nimitta means something quite different in the suttas. Okay, so the way we understand nimitta is like a vision or a light that we see in our meditation. Yeah, now that meaning comes from the Visuddhimagga, which was written 1,000 years later. The suttas, as far as I'm aware, never use the word nimitta to mean that. Okay. What they use instead, the suttas use idioms like they say, one sees forms. Yeah, that's one stock phrase. Sees forms, rupa. Yeah, forms. Or one perceives light is another stock phrase. Yeah, one perceives light, has vision of forms and perception of light. Now that sounds, must be talking something like the nimittas that we're talking about. And there's other places where it talks about that as well. So for example, it talks about the eight avibhayat, another basis of transcendence. being not percipient of forms internally, one sees forms externally, and these kinds of things. So this idiom of to see forms, yeah, rupa, I think this is what we mean today when we talk about a nimitta. It's just a shift in terminology. Yeah. So again, to repeat, what the main phrase is: that one perceives light, yeah, and one sees forms. Now, this phrase to perceive light is quite suggestive, and it uses the word sanjanati. Sanjanati is the verbal form of the word sanya, meaning perception. Yeah. In certain contexts, perception also seems to be included or very close to the second of the satipatthanas, of vedana anupassana, contemplation of feelings. Yeah? And I think I'm just trying to sort out the details in my mind now, but I think in the second tetrad of anapanasati, breath meditation, it has the phrase citta sankhara patisangvedi, experiencing the citta sankharas, yeah, mind sankharas, activities, processes, something like that, citta sankharas. Now those citta sankharas are explained in the context of anapanasati as being vedana cha sanya cha, feelings and perceptions, yeah. So this is why I mentioned just in passing a bit earlier that this contemplation of feeling can also be understood to include perceptions, because that's what it's actually described as in the suttas. And I think that perception is that perception of light. Okay, so that last bit is an inference. It's not actually stated in the sutta, but that's what I think it means. The same perception of light. Yeah? Or at least that's included. It might mean other things as well, but that's part of it. So I think that's suggested that in that section, contemplation of feelings, that citta sankhara patisangvedi, seeing of feelings and perceptions. Yeah?
Yeah, Bhante, it's interesting to see your description of the satipatthana as a natural unfolding process. As the mind gets calm and quiet, then it builds up and then leads on to the natural thing of the peaceful feeling going up and then the light. So I remember the Ajahn Brahm's explanation of the Anapanasati Sutta, the 16 steps, the 4 tetrads. In fact, there was one talk where he actually explained it in the Satipatthana as the first step, contemplation of body, as the contemplation of the breath, leading on then to get into samadhi. He says the next stage of feeling, contemplation of feeling, was actually developing the happiness, gladdening the mind.
Yeah.
And then that leads on to the light stage, is when the nimitta comes out. And then there was a description, the first step of the third was something, gladdening the mind or something.
Yeah.
There was a brightening up that nimitta and so on, and then gets into jhana. And the fourth tetrad, contemplation, was the dhammas. He explained it as the, when you get out of jhana, then direct the mind to examine these hindrances and the enlightenment factors. So in fact, his description of the anapanasati includes satipatthana.
Yep. Okay, so what is the reason why certain changes and so on were made to the Satipatthana Sutta? Well, that's a very controversial point. First of all, we'd have to be guessing. Now, in some cases, the changes are probably just made, by an editor or an editorial committee or a group of monks in a monastery who decide that they want to do things a certain way. And a lot of time these changes are not particularly important. Yeah, you make a certain decision to organize the scripture in a certain one way or another way, and a lot of them actually don't don't matter too much. It's just how you organize it. Yeah. And this kind of thing is rampant throughout the Pali Canon. Yeah. You know, so many times you see these kinds of things. Not just Pali Canon, but all the Buddhist scriptures. In certain circumstances, the choices of the different exercises, or how you particularly settle the details, may reflect the perspective of the people who are doing that. So that is to say, you may have different schools, or perhaps even like individual teachers or something, but the suttas are usually products of schools rather than the products of individuals. So we think in terms of a tendency within that school. And so a particular scripture might be framed in accord with a particular tendency of a certain school. Yeah? So I suspect that one of the main differences between the Pali version of the Satipatthana Sutta and all the other versions is that the Pali version seems to emphasize vipassana much more strongly. So at the end of every meditation exercise, it says you contemplate the origination factors, you contemplate the dissolution factors, and so on. Now this is vipassana, rise and fall, impermanence. Yeah. Now that particular passage is not standard and is not found in most of the other versions of the Satipatthana Sutta. Okay. So I think it's part of the evolution of the sutta, and that probably reflects an increasing emphasis on that kind of vipassana meditation within the Theravadan school at that time, say 200 to 400 years after the Buddha, whereas other schools' versions of the Satipatthana Sutta mentions in the same place it mentioned the practice of the four jhanas. So they're emphasizing the samatha side of it. You know, as I was saying in the talk, I think Satipatthana has both samatha and vipassana aspects. It's not one or the other. It has those aspects. But it seems that those things were emphasized. And so I don't think that those emphases in and of themselves are problematic. You know, it's just a different way of looking at it. But what becomes problematic when you take just one particular take on it and insist that that's the only one? Yeah, that's when it becomes problematic. Yeah.
Can I follow up? Actually, that sutra itself may be something like a way of teaching something. It is a how-to in a way. It is how-to sutra.
Yeah.
So I'm sure the people that have gone through that have actually practical experience. They follow and try that, isn't it? And to be wanting to change that sutra, after a few hundred years, I'm sure so many of the Buddhists have gone through that, you know. I don't think it is such a simple matter, isn't it? Because it is such a central, important sutra within the whole religion. So if we use that type of reasoning, then could there be any practical reason or anything that experience that they have gone through to make them think and agree to change that?
Yeah. Okay, well, of course it could be. And quite probably I think there's something to that, yeah? I think that, you know, it's likely that there were certain teachers who found that, you know, this was a useful teaching tool in that particular context. Sometimes there are different kinds of forces at work. So for example, in the Digha Nikaya, and I talked before about how the Digha Nikaya has a very long version of the Satipatthana Sutta, and that very long version very strongly emphasizes the vipassana aspect. It's all talking about the Four Noble Truths and impermanence and these kinds of things. Now I suspect the reason why that is, specifically for the Digha Nikaya version, is because if we take that away and look at the rest of the Digha Nikaya, we see that there's not actually a lot of vipassana taught there. The first 12 suttas in the Digha Nikaya all talk about the four jhanas. Jhana, 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 jhana. It's like listening to an Ajahn Brahm talk, yeah? And, so there's always talking about jhanas, and very little on vipassana. And that's a product of how the Digha Nikaya sort of became formed as a collection of scriptures. So in ancient times, the scriptures were like the students would specialize in one or other of the Nikayas. So most of them would specialize and do mainly the Digha Nikaya. So, you know, it would seem reasonable that the people who were organizing these scriptures would say, hey, you know, that Digha Nikaya doesn't have very much Vipassana material, doesn't have any, say, long descriptions of the Four Noble Truths, yeah? And these kinds of things. So how about we get some more Vipassana material, take this stuff from the Satipatthana Sutta, rearrange it a bit, and we can combine it with some other things from the Four Noble Truths, because it's not really changing the meaning of it. The Four Noble Truths are in there already, yeah? You're just giving more explanation material, and then we can put that there, and that gives a more balanced curriculum for the students of the Digha Nikaya, yeah? So that actually, you know, makes a lot of sense. So, you know, those kinds of things can be at work as well. It is one a reservation, or one thing that we should bear in mind also, is that if we look at the history of Buddhism, especially in Sri Lanka. Now, the reason I've suggested that this sutta was finally edited in Sri Lanka is because the versions that we have are quite different from that, especially of another school called the Dharmaguptaka. And the Dharmaguptaka were very, very close to the Theravada, and they split, I think, at the time of King Ashoka. So they're more or less two branches of the same school. So if the Theravadan version is quite different from the Dharmaguptaka, it suggests that the details were settled maybe in Sri Lanka. If we look at the timeline in Sri Lanka, in the early years, the histories will tell us of all these great meditation monks and all these arahants and so on and so forth. But only a couple of hundred years later, they don't talk so much about all the arahants anymore. They talk more about the scholar monks. And there was actually a formal decision made in the Theravadan school. They had a meeting in the Alu Vihara about 20 BC. That was when they decided to write down the Pali Canon. So for the first time they make an authoritative written version of the Pali Canon. And at that meeting they decided that practice was secondary. The primary thing was study and teaching of the scriptures. Yeah? That was a formal decision made by the Theravadan school. They've never reversed that decision. Yeah? It's still the official line is that practice is second, study is first. Yeah? So it's not, we shouldn't take it for granted that the people who were putting those scriptures together were in fact meditators. Maybe they were, maybe they were influenced by meditation, but maybe they weren't. Maybe they were just scholars. But you didn't know that, did you? Yeah? So you don't like to talk about it too much.
Buddha Gosa went to the Abhidhamma, the Visuddhimagga in Sri Lanka, right?
Yeah.
And some of the commentaries he wrote up were based on the earlier commentaries done in Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
That would be around what period after this decision to write down?
The commentarial literature was probably like a growing body of literature, the old commentaries, over many hundreds, or certainly was growing over many hundreds of years. Perhaps the nucleus of it may well have been brought from India, because there are certain things in the commentaries, the Pali commentaries, which are affected or influenced by developments going on the mainland in India. But if you look at the stories in the Visuddhimagga and the commentaries, very rarely do they tell stories about monks and so on in India. Almost always it's stories about monks in practicing in Sri Lanka. And the dates of those stem up to about the time of Christ or a bit later, maybe first or occasionally the second century, and after that there's nothing. So it seems like the commentaries mainly stemmed from that period, from about, say, 200 BC up to about 200 AD, and that's when the old Sri Lankan commentaries were formed. When Buddhaghosa came along, he took all those old Sri Lankan commentaries, which were in Sinhalese Prakrit, not in Pali, then he translated them all into Pali and edited them into one consistent version. But everyone seems to be agreed that largely it was a job of translation and editing. He wasn't an original composer. so that the commentary, the most of the actual content of the commentaries should be dated from about 1st century BC to 1st century AD. Okay, so it's nearly 10 o'clock, so we don't want to cause our friends at Tansing any more headaches, since they've been so kind for us and let us put the talks on. So maybe we can just finish by paying respects to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha.